Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing from a guy that owned an Italian restaurant for years and years, and then saw the restaurant business changing, so he pivoted to multifamily, then you are going to want to hear what Gino Barbero has to say. Not only did Gino pivot to a new industry he knew nothing about, but he and his partner, Jake Stenziano, formed Jake and Gino, which has become a nationally recognized leader in the multifamily industry. Jake and Gino have written two books, have a podcast, a blog, an annual conference, mentoring programs, a vertically integrated management company and rehab company. These guys are down to earth, transparent, and focused on helping the next guy. Before we jump into the intro, I want to thank all of you. We launched the podcast just a few months ago, and we already have over 250 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. This has been amazing and so much fun. If you are enjoying the podcast, I've got a big ask for you. Can you please send out a share with a link to your favorite episode on your social media? That's right. Actually, share the podcast with all your followers on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, wherever. This is your chance and your opportunity to take action and help others get exposed to the wealth-building impact of real estate. I thank you in advance for what you're about to do. Now, on to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Gino Barbero before we start the show. Gino grew up and owned a restaurant in New York State. He currently lives in St. Augustine, Florida, with his wife and six children. He and his partner own over 1,600 units, and they have helped students in their mentorship program purchase over, get this, 10,000 units. When I asked what his stretch goal is, I love his answer. Feed 1 million kids by 2030. Focused on helping others. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone. Today we have another special guest. We've got Gino Barbero with us. Gino from Jake and Gino. So special guest here today. I appreciate you coming on.
Darren, thanks for having me on. How you doing?
Excellent. So we had your partner, Jake Stenziano, on probably about a month back, and he gave a great story. And so I'm excited to hear the other side of it. He was on his best behavior, and he gave a lot of glowing remarks towards you as being his partner. So I am looking forward to this conversation. So for the listeners, how I know Gino is, this is actually the first time that we're talking. We've engaged with each other over social media. As I mentioned, we had Jake Stenziano, his partner, on about a month ago, and Jake and Gino are just, they're leaders in the space. They've been around for a while. And when I got involved about 3 years ago, first step is, educating yourself. And I went out and started reading books, and their book, Wheelbarrow Profits, was one of the books that I read. So it is exciting to have these guys on. So Gino, again, thank you for coming on. To start with, can you just share, Jake had mentioned it, but can you just share once again where you guys are at in terms of how many properties, how many units?
We're currently at 1,600 units right now. Jake and I purchased the first 1,000 with just myself, Jake, and another partner, Mike. We were able to refi and roll over $10 million out of our assets and buy the next deal. And think of it as a conveyor belt. You buy a deal, you know, it took us 18 months to get into that first deal. That first deal you buy, 18 to 24 months, that deal starts producing really, or you have a liquidity event, whether it's a refinance or a sale. While you're doing that, you keep stacking that conveyor belt. And we were able to stack the first 1,000 units on that conveyor belt, and they're continuing to produce. And about 2 years ago, we syndicated our first deal. The next 600 units after 1,000, we've syndicated. So it's just one of those tools in the toolbox, whether you're buying, whether you're owner financing, whether you're syndicating, JVing, you have to figure out the deal, the parameters, what you're looking for. I wish we had started syndicating a little bit sooner. It just wasn't in our model, and we just didn't feel comfortable, right? And one of those things where, you know, Darren, you said in the beginning, get out there and get educated. That's what I ended up doing. I ended up listening to countless podcasts. I had the honor and privilege of interviewing other podcasters who were, you know, in the multifamily space doing syndication. So for everybody out there, don't look at just one technique. Try to learn all of the techniques. That's why we teach buy right, manage right, and finance right. But within those, there's so many different techniques that you need to learn. And learning where you are in the market cycle is going to actually help you out to utilize those different techniques. So for Jake and I, we're just continuing to buy. And we had spoken off camera, Darren, about where the market is, where the economy is. What I see right now is these bigger deals are getting still bid up. You know, because there's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of institutional money that needs to be placed. We just closed on a 52 unit back in February. We closed on a 48 unit about a month ago, and we're looking at another 46 unit. Are they sexy? No. But do they pay? Yes. And they will make you rich, which people don't understand. You don't need to be on Instagram closing 300 unit deals. You need to be doing deals that make sense. Think big, start small. And if that's what the defense is giving you, take the smaller deals, because sooner or later, the economy is going to shift. The market's going to shift. You're in it. You're creating credibility. You're creating momentum. You're creating relationships. And then all of a sudden, next year, 150 unit deal falls in your lap.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And you know what? So I interview a lot of syndicators on this show. And, you know, so you kind of get pigeonholed in one little bucket. And so I think that's a great point to look at multiple different avenues, you know, to finance these deals and put these deals and structure these deals going forward. And and each deal, you know, may lend itself to one way or the other. So, and the other thing that you said, which I think is critical for the listeners to hear, is that, look, you guys are leaders. Like you guys have been in the space, you know, you've written books, you've got, you know, a great podcast, you guys are 1600 units, you've built a ton of wealth. But what you said was, hey, look, when we wanted to go this other route, we had to go educate ourselves on that other route, on syndication. You were already in the business, but you went and educated yourself. And that's so important for the listeners, that you know you need to educate yourself and surround yourself with like-minded people that have done what you want to do. Whether that's go small or whether that's go big, I don't think that there's right or wrong, you know, to that question. It just is an individual perspective. But get in the game is definitely one of the telltale things that both of us, I think, would agree on. Mm-hmm. So, Gino, one of the things that Jake said a number of times during our conversation was that he said, you know, Gino's not just my partner. He's a mentor to me. So, you know, you guys have a little bit of a difference in age factor. And you were also a business owner and he wasn't a business owner. So kind of talk to me and the listeners and let us know kind of how'd you guys come together? How did that start out? And then how'd you end up deciding to go the multifamily route?
Well, I met Jake back in 2009 through my brother. We owned a restaurant and Jake was a pharmaceutical rep. And he was one of those guys, very rare, who was prepared. I mean, he actually had the days. It's January 16th. Gino, I need a delivery down to the Bronx. I live, you know, the restaurant was 45 minutes away. So I would have his stuff. He was all organized. He worked his day. And people are like, how can you be so structured? You need to be structured because you don't need to think about what you're doing. So that, to me, that attracted me. He was a hard worker. He was a good dude. His values aligned with my values. And, you know, 2011 comes, he decides to go to Knoxville. And I'm like, Jake, if you're going down to Knoxville, there's some pretty good deals here. I didn't know where Knoxville, Tennessee was. I'm a New Yorker back then. You know, where's, you're a New Yorker, you know, the tri-state area. So go down there. I said, let's start looking at deals together. He gets down there. He goes without his wife. He suffers for 6 months. And for me, it's the constant hard work, the constant getting rejected. It took us 18 months to get into that first deal. When we got into that first deal, you know, it was awesome, but it took a lot of work and we learned a lot. And I guess we can call each other mentors because he's taught me a lot of stuff in the business. I've taught him a lot of stuff. And the great thing about our partnership is, you know, yesterday he went on a property tour. He wasted half an hour before he even saw somebody. He was a nightmare of a tour because the tenant was showing him around. The property was, you know, and he wasted about 2 hours of his day. I didn't even think to say, hey, thanks, buddy, for doing that, because I'm doing my own stuff. So when you're a partner, whether you're, you know, it falls upon my spouse too. We have a podcast, my spouse and I, it's called The Multifamily Zone. And I do the same thing with my wife. I'm not saying that I'm taking her for granted or taking advantage of her, but that's what you do when you're a partner. You're committed to that relationship. And we don't even think about saying, you know, thanks, or it's just divide and conquer. That's what we do. I'm on this podcast right now. He's probably doing something in the property management space right now. So that's what you're looking for in a partner. One who has complementary values, one who is really value-based decision-making. For us, we had the same morals. We had the same goals. It was staying in our lane, right? Not that shiny object syndrome. We didn't want crypto. We didn't want to flip single-family homes. We didn't want to do vacation rentals. All those are great spaces, but we really needed to learn our space and we needed to conquer that space. And we're continuing to learn. You know, the Jake and Gino community, it's amazing. We just had an event this weekend. He wasn't able to come, Jake, right? So it's divide and conquer. He didn't say, hey, Gino, thanks for picking up the slack. I know he's grateful that I went there and I would do it again. That's what partnerships are all about. But for us to have that event, we're teaching, but at the same time, I'm learning so many amazing things, like that conveyor belt analogy that I told you. And the other one, Darren, when somebody asks you, is it a good deal? Well, there's so many answers to that, but really look at it when it's a good deal. Our coach, Bill Hamm, said, what's your cost of capital? And I love that answer because you're looking at the debt component. Debt is like 3% now. And what if you're syndicating a deal, are you giving out another pref for 5 or 6? So your cost of capital is 10%. So you're looking at between an 8% and 10% cash on cash return. I never thought of that in its simplicity. That's why a lot of deals aren't working, because the cost of capital is around 10 and deals are not yielding that right now. So to my point is constant growth, right? We've created our core values. I'm sure Jake probably shared them with you, but it's people first. It's extreme ownership. Right? I owned it that I went this weekend and he owned it that he was on the show last month. It's unwavering ethics. It's make it happen. And it's growth mindset. And that's what our core values are. We flesh them out. And I think when you start a partnership with somebody else, it may be a one-off. It may be, hey, let's do one property together and see how it works. Because it really is a marriage. It really is, you know, a relationship. Jake had an unfortunate incident happen, you know, with his house, something personal in his life. And I was speaking to him about it last night. And, you know, he can call me, and he's not a very personal guy. He's not a really emotional guy, but you need that in a partnership. You know, we've been working together 6-7 years. It's not just about the numbers. I go to his house once a year. I stay in his house for the week. My kids love going up there. and you know, the wives get along really well. You know, that means a lot. Being locked in, because what you're doing is you're really making a commitment to him, and I'm making a commitment to his kids. So for me to work really hard, I'm not only working hard for my family, but I'm working hard for his family and vice versa.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I brought up to him and would like to get your take on is, look, you guys partnered together. You know, you were looking to do something different and grow wealth. But then as you started to do deals, like you started to like branch into different areas, right? I mean, you wrote a couple books, you got a couple podcasts, then you started mentoring other people and putting a lot of education platforms out there. Why did you do that? Why didn't you just, you know, kind of stay the silent owners and just build wealth?
That's a great question. I mean, life is like what I've been going through. I've got 6 kids aged 21 to 6, right? And every time you have a child, it's like an evolution. Something changes, right? And it's like you're getting better at what you're doing and you're actually enjoying it, right? So for me, you know, we call it multifaceted multifamily. We didn't think about it when we first started. That's why I want everyone to hear this. You can always think of the end in mind. We started out with that first investment property, and our first stream of revenue was the investment property. But Jake decided to property manage it full time because he wanted to get out of his W-2 and he wanted to earn some income, right? So there's 2 revenue streams from that first property. After about 18 months from that first deal, we had our third deal was 136 units. So we have 200 units now. And I'm on the precipice of leaving my quote unquote W-2/restaurant. And I'm like, Jake, let's just write a book, right? And that's what partners do. We push each other. So we write the Wheel of Our Profits book and we start a podcast because it's a lot of fun. And all of a sudden, you know, being able to podcast Robert Kiyosaki and T. Harv Eker and all your mentors, I'm having Zig Ziglar's son on, you know, next week on the show. I'm having Kyle Wilson, all these people that you look up to and you're able to, you know, interview. It's amazing, right? And I didn't think of monetizing Jake and Gino. That's the third revenue stream. It's an education platform. I did it more for myself that I just wanted to get out there and have some credibility with the brokers, right? We write a credibility book. We write a book. We start a podcast. We're able to interview these people. That starts going. And then all of a sudden, we hire some people for the sales company, for the company, and that starts growing. And then all of a sudden, from that, we have a live event in November of 2017. It was the first one we had. 175 people showed up. I couldn't believe 175 people showed up at an event. Was it a great event? Looking back at it, there was a lot of holes there. But you know what? Our investor list went from zero to hero. We had a couple hundred people on our investor list already. So November of 2018, the momentum, like I said, the second event, we have 450 people in Nashville and our investor list goes to 500 people. And guess what? All of a sudden, we're like, we have 500 people. Let's partner up with somebody to start RAM Partners, our syndication arm, right? And the great thing about it, multifaceted, they're all complementary. They all work well together. When I sign somebody up as an education student, I have the ability to teach them about syndication. If they want to learn how to syndicate or they want to become a partner in one of our deals, LP, that works really good. So from there, you're creating that third stream, which is, you know, the asset management fees, the acquisition fees. And from there, Jake's like, let's start a capital company. We're going to do mortgages for our students. And it's grows slowly. But the thing is, we are able to share the pie. We don't need the whole pie. Jake is doing property management day to day. I'm doing the education day to day. We've got somebody helping us with the syndication. They all come together. They all work really well together. And you don't have to do that to become super wealthy. We just love what we're doing. I could retire right now. I could live off the draws, but I don't want to do that. I mean, I'm only 50 years old. What am I going to do with it? I'm not a beach guy. I've got, my mind is going 24/7 all the time on how to create value and how to help students. I mean, I have over 30 students have quit their W-2s. Our students have closed over 10,000 units. That to me is the symbol. Everyone always says, hey, how many units do you want to own? I want my students to own 50,000 units by the year 2022, right? That's what my goal is. Because if I can create wealth and I can affect one person, that one person's household, how many people get affected from that? Because for me, ultimately, people with financial education can change the world for the better. If we can educate people financially and see what's going on right now, that will make them better investors. That will make this country a much better place to live.
Completely agree. And I can see why you guys are partners. You guys both have a tremendous passion for the business. You guys both love to give back and help other people. And you don't want to, you could cash it in, but neither one of you want to. So I think that's awesome.
Darren, it's always trying to get better though, right? I mean, like, I think what happens when I was a W-2 and when I was middle class, I was chasing the money. Ken Clothier told me this the other day. I was chasing the money. And an entrepreneur is all about chasing the value and all about creating value. So when you're in multifamily, you have 1,000 apartment units, you're creating value for 1,000 people who are living, right? If they're not tenants, they're residents, and they're not units, they're apartment homes, right? So that whole mind shift, when you start chasing the money, that's not the good thing. When you start chasing value and start creating value, everything in your life will change.
I completely agree. So I think that holds true for syndication as well. So, you know, on the syndication side, there are some people that get really caught up and nervous and how am I going to raise the money? How am I going to get money from other people?
Yes.
And I'm like, that's not the way to look at it because we're presenting an opportunity for all these other people to grow their wealth and they don't have to say yes. And you just kind of move on to the next person. But I wish somebody had presented those opportunities to me, you know, I was making great money in different industries in prior career paths, and I didn't have any of those opportunities presented to me. So it's an opportunity to grow wealth in an asset class that has tremendous leverage benefits and tremendous tax efficiency. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a matter of giving back. And I met with a life insurance guy. I'm 50 also, by the way. And he was like, hey, Darren, let's back into the when you want to retire and back into the nest egg you need, right? And I'm like, you know what? With this multifamily thing, I don't even really want to. Like, you know, if I can help other people grow their wealth. I mean, that I did one syndication deal, 76-unit deal. There's 44 limited partners. So as we have a capital event, either a refi or a sale, mm-hmm. it's not just Darren Batchelder and my family that's going to our wealth group be grown, but all these limited partners. So think about what you guys are doing when you talk about 10,000 units with your students, right? You think mm-hmm. about how many of those are syndicated deals and how many limited partners are involved in all those deals. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the apartment, you know, tenants, but it's all the investors that are involved in that.
There's a couple of things you mentioned there. The first thing is when I think of saving for an event like retirement, that's the middle class mindset. Let's save for something because that savings will be depleted. I'll give you an example. My daughter is a senior in college. We bought our first property back in 2013. We bought it for $600,000. We used owner financing. 2.5 years later, we refinanced that property out. I pulled $160,000 out of that property, me, Jake, and my brother, Mark. We pulled out double what we put in, reinvested it. But more importantly, I still own that property to this day. We cost segregated it. We are netting $6,000 a month, every month for the last year and a half. That's $2,000 to me. Now, people might be like, you're not going to get rich off of that. That's my college savings plan for my daughter. She's gone to school for 4 years. My son's coming up to bat. Then my next daughter, then my next daughter. Can you understand that? So that one asset is paying for all of their college. It's not putting it into a savings fund. And what is that asset doing? It's appreciating in value. I'm paying down the principal and I'm just making rips every month. That's what people have to understand. That's very difficult. I love life insurance. I just got a whole life policy for my wife. It's the vehicle. Vehicles are used for certain places to get from point A to point B. The multifamily vehicle is an amazing vehicle. Life insurance, when utilized properly, is an amazing vehicle. I have a policy for myself for the last 20 years. I'm putting in $5,000 now. It's giving me 10 every year. I've got a death benefit and I've got guaranteed cash, which I can collateralize, which is awesome. My wife, I front loaded a policy for her. She's super preferred, 44 years old. I'm using that as a liquidity event. I am becoming my own banker that I can get the liquidity, put the money in and pull it out. But if you don't know these financial techniques, you're going to blame the government. You're going to blame it. It's about time that people take control of their own financial future and learn what's going on because these are all out there. I didn't know this 15 years ago because I was out there blaming everybody else. I was just telling this on another podcast. I read the book back in 2008 with T. Harv Eker, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. I read the book. I wanted to punch the guy. Then I read it again. I'm like, you know what? Really? I'm like, you know what?
That's funny.
He's preaching to the choir. I mean, like responsibility. The fruits are in your roots. You need to step up and work on yourself, work on your own personal development, work on your growth before you can expect to. Because you know what? If you're not ready, you're going to make an asset. You're going to buy that asset and then you're going to lose that asset. So really working on yourself, working on personal development and challenging those ideas of the middle class. You know, Garrett Gunderson wrote a great book, Killing Sacred Cows. That was another one of my-
That was a great book.
I mean, listen, it's abundance and scarcity and it's your sole purpose. That's what it comes down to. When you're middle class, you think of scarcity. You're saving for your retirement. You've got $3 million saved and you're 62 years old. You're afraid to touch that because that money's going to run out. But for me, I'm buying assets that are producing income and I can sell off those assets and maybe take a seller finance note and live off of that. So I have more options and I'm not thinking about it. I have a skill set that will translate when I'm 70 years old. I can still pick up the phone and coach people. I can still speak. I can still write books. I can still buy multifamily. So it's really learning those skills and finding out if you do want to retire, there's nothing wrong with it, but just try to position yourself as just not the saver. Try to actually buy some assets or try to invest in yourself to learn skills that will put you through life.
Man, listen up to him, you guys. I mean, that he talked about so many great things there. When I joined this multifamily mentorship group and I met other people that were doing it, I had somebody that was kind enough to tell me that, you know, like, hey, Darren, you need to change your mindset. It's not about building up a nest egg because once you build up that nest egg and say you do retire, nobody wants to deplete it.
It's true, right?
You spend your whole life to build it up and like you, now you're going to start pulling it down. Like so now you're going to live a meager lifestyle because you don't want it to go down. Mm-hmm. But that's the way so many of us are just trained, you know, through the education system. So, you know, it's great now that there's podcasts and books out there. Not everybody is exposed to it. So we all have a responsibility. Even you listeners, you have a responsibility to go tell your friends, you know, that there is another way and let other people know because it is a big mindset shift.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So let's talk about your second book a little bit. So I had not read honeybee when I had the discussion with Jake, but about 2 weeks ago, I bought, well, right after we had the show, I went out and bought the book, and about 2 weeks ago, I read it, and it's a pretty short book that you can sit down and read it, and I think I read it in, you know, a day. I would, help me if you disagree with this. I would say it's an amazing book for somebody that is just looking at trying to get into a different business. They're a W-2 employee, and they've heard about you should have multiple streams of income, but I don't really understand it and why and all that. I mean, it's a pretty simplified book, but it's got some great nuggets in it. Great nuggets in it. And I really, really enjoyed it. So talk about a few of the lessons in there, and talk about how you and Jake came together to write this book.
Well, for us, one of our favorite books was The Richest Man in Babylon, right? And that's a parable. It's easily, yeah. I've had most of my children read it. And they're simple concepts. Right. Save 10% of your money. Don't work with dirtbags. Work with people, right? It's very simple, right?
Right.
So I said, Jake, and Jake doesn't like to write. He doesn't like to read, right? He's an Audible guy. So I said, let's write this book. We have the idea. And it was really written for anybody who has a business also. You know, I had a restaurant business and I was implementing these strategies. The strategies were I had the physical location. All of a sudden, my wife and I, we wrote a cookbook. And then from that cookbook, we started doing YouTube videos and training videos. And from that, we started creating physical products, vertical garden bags, cutlery. And then from there, we were doing catering events. So it was multifaceted in a way of the restaurant business, right? Now, if you're a single family home and you're in that space, multifaceted works there. The honeybee can work in that also. You're fixing and flipping homes. You may have a real estate license. You're lending private money, right? You may start an insurance company with somebody. You may have a title company with somebody. You may do education in that space. So for us, it was basically our journey. You know, Noah's in the book. He's a disaffected salesman. He's driving on the road one day. His car blows out. His tire blows out. And a gentleman named Tom pulls up. He's in a B suit. And Noah doesn't think anything of it. He's driving a beat up Ford, right? And gets in the truck with Tom. He goes to Tom's house, and it's Tributary Acres. When he pulls in, he's like, holy crap, this guy doesn't look like he could rub two nickels, and he's got this mansion, right? Tom's a beekeeper. And really the most important part of the story, and I think the way you're going to shift your mind, is Tom is the beekeeper. And the analogy is the bees are the 9-to-5 workers. They're going to the beehive and they're making honey. Do they ever stop and ask, why am I making honey? Why am I doing it? No, they're just programmed like most of us in the rat race, right? It's a human construct. But who's getting wealthy out there? Now, Tom obviously is investing in the beehive. He's taking care of the beehive. But ultimately, it's the long game for Tom, just like us in multifamily. He's the one who owns it. He's got equity and he owns a draw. So the person who owns the hive is the one who's making the money. And Noah starts out with his W-2. He hates it. And Tom says to him, start real estate. So they start renting out a room in their basement. Starts out with a little Airbnb. You don't have to conquer the world. You know, it's the proof of concept where Jake and I, we had started out with a small 25 unit property. Noah starts out in his basement, rents that out. Everything's going great, but then he makes a little slip up. And that's what it is. You're going to get those punches to the gut, but then you have to say to yourself, what can I learn from this? It's not the asset. It's not what you're doing that's the mistake. You're the one making the mistake, and you have to learn. Because if you've never gotten into real estate or you've never gotten into the restaurant business and you start, don't expect it all to be thumbs up. It's going to be hard. You're going to have challenges. But Noah figures it out. I hate my job more. You know, there's two emotions. There's fear. And most times when people have fear, they're paralyzed. I think Noah expressed, like me and like Jake, anger. Once you express that emotion of anger, that makes you take action. You know, I was angry in 2008. I went out and I sought a mentor. I really got burned in a couple of other real estate deals that really pissed me off. So I'm like, I have to do it the right way. So that anger, I think, drive Noah. And then all of a sudden he said, you know what? I'm going to go buy a duplex. And then I'm going to go buy another duplex. And he's scaling up. He doesn't have time. And what does he do? Goes back to Tom. And Tom doesn't say how. He says, who can help you? Wow, let me hire a property management company. That dawns on him, but he's like, I can't keep all the money, but you can at least start creating a business. And on the way, what Noah does, he goes into a restaurant and he invests in a restaurant called Buster's Bistro. That's not his strength, right? If he had bought the real estate in the restaurant, that's one thing. But investing in the restaurant, not knowing anything, he loses his capital. So that's one of those lessons where you got to stay on the course, Don't go out. If you own, you know, the multifamily, don't go out and buy a car wash unless you can buy the real estate. That's not a complimentary stream of revenue. That's not in your business model. If you want to learn it, that's one thing. That's what they did. So they lost capital there. They got back on track, going back and visiting Tom, and Tom always sharing these words of wisdom with him. He continued to scale up, continued to grow his business. And then ultimately, he gets to a point where I've got all this money. What am I doing it for? He creates a charitable foundation. You know, that's what we did with Jake and Gino. We have Rand Cares. And ultimately, you're making this money, but you want to give back. You want to have impact. And one of their impacts was starting a school. And they started a school at the end. They helped kids who are underprivileged. And that's what it comes down to. It comes full circle, coming from that W-2 employee to buying a couple of assets to creating these amazing streams of revenue. It's called Tributary Acres, because all those little streams of revenue, they're starting out small. But then what happens over time? They become a raging river, and his business became a raging river, a raging success. And then you start pondering it and going, you know, what's this all about? What's this all for? So with the end in mind, we should all think of creating wealth, but at the same time, how do we impact others? How do we help others?
What a great, great way to look at things. In the book, it talked about find your surplus. And, you know, so you know, the way you describe the book is very much the way both of you describe your guys' business and how you talk to new people about getting into the business. Look, you don't have to buy a 200 unit deal right out of the gate. Now, some people do that, and I you know, applaud people that do that. And they, you know, in order to do that, you have to partner with other very highly experienced people that they can get it done. But you know, the book with that terminology, find your surplus, I felt like when I was reading it, this gives people hope from the very beginning of knowledge, you know, and of getting into the space, that you can find some way of getting in. And and you guys in the book, the example was they rented out a room in their house, you know, and the basement. And that was like, wow, you know, because I think that, you know, reading these books, listening to podcasts, they're great for the person that has made the decision they're going to do it. And they're just trying to figure out how. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's a segment of people out there that they have always wanted to be in real estate, but it's just too scary for them. And they think it's too big for them. And so I think that book was great from the standpoint it really brought everybody into the picture. Anybody can get involved.
So Darren, for us, one of my revelations that I had going through my journey is that when you're buying multifamily, you're buying a business. And you know, Jake and Gino, our most successful students is they become entrepreneurs. So we like to say we create multifamily entrepreneurs, because listen, you're buying a 25 unit property. There's a stream of revenue. There's a little business right there. And if you can look at it from that perspective and not worry just on the landlording aspect of it, that's one of the parts. Remember, buy right, manage right, finance right. You need to do that. But do you need to be doing that, right? That's the question that you can answer yourself. We have a property management company. We're vertically integrated. We like that aspect. You can go to third-party property management. That's a choice. But I think if you're focusing just on real estate as just real estate and not as an asset and not as a business, you're going to be doing a lot of harm to yourself, because the biggest mistake is as you start scaling up, you can hire other people. You know, OPT, other people's time. That's what entrepreneurs do. Look at the massive companies, whether it's Amazon, whether it's Apple, whether it's Tesla. They're hiring other people. They're leveraging other people's time. And that's what multifamily allows you to do. Once you get to that 50, 60, 70 unit plateau, you can hire a property manager and a property maintenance tech full time. The problem with that is, as we start our entrepreneurial journey, it's the I'm a mentality. I'm sure Jake shared this with you. I'm a do this and I'm a do that. That person needs to start, because you need to take total responsibility. You need to learn the business. But when you get to 60, 70 units, that person needs to start dying. And I don't know if it's a little bit of an ego. I don't know if you think you can do it better than somebody else. But if that person doesn't die, you're going to become a burned out mom and pop landlord who Jake and Gino and who Darren are going to buy from. That's the reality. And it's tough, right? And for us, it was very difficult. Jake's out there, you know, cutting with his chainsaw, cutting the grass while he's working his 9 to 5. And we said, we can't do this. We need to start scaling up. And it's a progression. That's why I say to people, you don't have to buy that 100 unit property on your first go around, because you don't know all this stuff. Because when you buy 100 units on your first go around, all of a sudden 10 vacant units, you know how to turn them? Do you know how to advertise for them? But on our 25 unit property, when we had two or three vacants, we could assume that it wasn't soul crushing for us. And it just gave us the ability to go on. And from 25 units, our next one was a 36 unit. So we have systems where we're implementing as we were growing. And if you're saying to yourself, I don't even know how to manage a property, hire third party property management and do what Jake calls R&D, rip off and duplicate, learn their processes. And if you don't want to have the third party property management take it over yourself, you at least have their experience going in. Join a mentorship program. At Jake and Gino, we teach manage right. We actually, our students sometimes teach the property management companies our systems because we're doing them every single day. And a lot of these property management companies for these smaller assets, they don't. They're mom and pops also. They don't have anything online. They don't have online portals. They don't have really good websites. They don't have this the tools and the systems that we're implementing because they're more of the mom and popish. They're running around treating it not as a business. Like I said, they're just treating it as real estate and as, you know, something that's just disjointed.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned whether Jake had brought anything up, and he did on that note. You know, he said that you guys were going after some deal. I can't remember which deal it was, but he brought the bank out there, and it was the president of the bank or whatever. And he was like, "Don't worry, if I have to come out here and take care of the landscaping, I'll do it. I'll do whatever. You're in good hands." And he's like, "You know what? I love your enthusiasm, but you're not going to be able to scale that way."
That's right. It was Jim Clayton. Jim Clayton Clayton Homes. He sold his company to Warren Buffett back in 2003. And it's the same thing. Something very simple as check cashing. A check cashing machine in the office. You can scan the checks instead of having running to the bank. And people might be saying, "Oh, you know, it's only a couple of minutes every day." Well, getting in the car, wasting time, and you translate that among 10 or 15 different things you're doing a day, that saves up to hours and hours at a time. And when I say systems, I'm not talking about something that's overwhelming and something that's daunting. It's just something that you do throughout the day. You document, you can either shoot a Loom video, you can record it, or you put the processes in some place and it's easily replicatable. So for instance, at the restaurant, I didn't have any systems. I would hire somebody, they would all answer the phone differently. Very simple. "Hey, Gino Stretteria, how may I help you?" And let everyone do that. That's a system. When somebody walks into the restaurant, you have somebody sitting there, greet them the same way. Grab the menus the same way, interact the same exact way. That's another system. It's very simple. When you onboard an employee, what are the steps that you're doing? And you know what? You may say to yourself, "I can't get this done. There's a lot." You have quarterly priorities. Every 3 months, set up quarterly priorities and maybe create 3 or 4 systems in your business. You can do that. One system a week, there's 13 weeks. You have 13 systems at the end of the quarter times 4. You have 52 systems built out. It's just you need to start and don't feel it's overwhelming or it's daunting. I never started at the restaurant. That's why I had one restaurant for 20 years and 1,600 apartment units in 6 years. So you go do the math. It's just a mind shift and it's just the ability to say, "How do I get better?"
Yeah. That's great. And sometimes you think, just like you said, you don't have time. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, there's, a question comes back to you and you have to stop everything you're doing to explain mm-hmm. how to do it. And had you just invested some time, ahead of time, you mm-hmm. wouldn't have had to do that. You could just point right to it, to that process. Hey, the book also talks, one of the things I love about this business is new people coming into the business and becoming successful. And you guys teach people how to do that. But in the book, it says you're capable of much more than you think. And I that goes along with the fact that the book is written. So it includes everybody from just the very, very startup person. And I think that's so key because some people just talk themselves out of don't think they're worthy mm-hmm. of being able to do it. And so you give them some inspiration.
So for me, that's one of the things that I didn't even mention about the partnership. The partnership is that accountability piece, right? When you're out there all alone and you're doing it by yourself, sometimes you're on an island and you don't feel like calling the broker, or you don't feel like underwriting, or you don't feel like getting on a podcast with Darren. In the back of my mind, I've got Jake saying, "Dude, We got to make it happen. Divide and conquer. So I don't even think twice about it, right? I got to call the broker. I'm picking the phone up. I have to underwrite a deal. I'm going to do it because my partner is doing his share. And it's holding accountability. And that's the other reason why I like the coaching model. I like the mentorship model because every 2 weeks you're on a call with the coach. If you don't feel like doing the work, guess what? You're going to do the work because you're not going to let your coach down. You'll let yourself down. You know, you'll let yourself down every day of the week. But if you have to do it for somebody else, you're not doing it. So holding yourself accountable with that person saying, I'm going to get on every 2 weeks. I'm going to underwrite the deals. I'm going to just get that stuff done. It really is a big thing. And I love that accountability piece. And, you know, I guess Tom in the book was Noah's accountability. Noah would go back every few months back to Tom, ask for advice. But it's not just asking for advice. I don't think he wanted to let Tom down. I think ultimately, if you really stop and think about it, you don't want to let your mentor down. And one thing that I always stress to people is, I just actually heard this from a friend the other day. He says, you know, have you ever met somebody who's an asshole? It's a person who's an asshole who keeps asking, but he never does anything with the information. But if that person gives me $5,000 and I start giving information, he's going to take my advice because he has skin in the game. It's the same thing when you're dealing in multifamily. I don't want to partner with somebody unless they have skin in the game, unless they have something to lose. So that's really important when you're looking at an investment or you're looking at a relationship. We both have to be bought into that relationship.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I interviewed another multifamily guy who, you know, I met with him before we had the interview, and he also does some mentoring in addition to purchasing. And so I was talking to him about that, and he said, Hey, Darren, here's the deal is like, I love to give back and I love to, you know, help other people, but I found myself spending a lot of time on these phone calls, and I spend, say, an hour talking to somebody, and then I never hear from them again. Mm-hmm. And so I started to think to myself, well, how many of these people that I talk to actually take action? You know, I want to help as many people as possible, but I want to help the right people. Mm-hmm. And so he said, Darren, I created a mentorship program and put a fee on it. You know, yeah, it's an additional revenue stream, but it wasn't for that purpose. It was to weed out the ones that really are committed to moving forward and really committed to taking that knowledge and putting it into action. I thought that was awesome because there are a lot of people out there that, you know, just look at the value ladder and like, how much money can I get, you know, from each person and maximize, you know, and it was just a different mindset. And I thought that was a great way to look at it. And I heard similar out of what you just said.
Yep.
So talk about, how you guys, you've talked about how you did books and, you know, the podcasts, and some of this stuff is uncomfortable the first time you do it, you know, when you learn.
It's still uncomfortable.
So how do you, like, I know I don't know what episode we're going to be in the 20s on my podcast, but you know, when I was first, you know, starting, and my kids would walk by my office and laugh at me because I was, you know, talking into the microphone, and they're laughing at their dad, you know? So it is uncomfortable at first, but the thing that gets me is, one, I get to look, I read your book 3 years ago, went before I even invested, and here we are talking, which is awesome. So you get to interview great people and learn from people that are ahead of you. But it's also about reaching people that you wouldn't have reached before. Like, if had you guys not written a book, I never would have read it, you know? Mm-hmm. And now, it wasn't like I read the book and I called you up a week later and said, hey, let me invest in your deal. But here we are, you know, 3 years later, and we're on a podcast, and I was planning on going to that 2018 conference in Orlando. Like, you guys had built up a social media presence, and I remember reading the book, and you guys, I've talked to a lot of syndicators that are in your guys' group. They talk so highly about you guys, how transparent you are and team oriented you are. And so I really wanted to go, you know, meet you guys and meet other people in the group. And then, for some reason or another, I couldn't make it. I had a conflict, but I hope to be at the next one.
Mm-hmm. So for me, I think the question is, as I get older, I realize that, and this is what my coaches told me, we're all winging it out there. Just don't think you on Instagram, you see someone with 6 million followers, they have it figured out. They just got really good. I got really good at a strategy. It's taken me a couple of years to figure out. And I tweaked a couple of things. And I think that's what we have to focus on. I had a strong enough why. And when my why was strong enough and I was clear enough that what I wanted, you know, people would say, hey, what do you want? I don't want to work at the restaurant. Yeah, but that's not what I'm asking you. What do you want? Once I realized what I wanted to make an impact. I wanted to get better at something. And that's the other thing with Jake and I drives us. We want to get really good at something. And when you're really good and competent at something, you become passionate about it and you just get better and it compounds and it compounds and it compounds. And there's two quotes that I like to live by: commit and then figure it out, and done is better than perfect. I live by those. We just had a Facebook challenge a couple of weeks ago, 5 days, never did one before. I set expectations low as far as what sales we had. We actually did pretty good, but I'm not focusing on the results. I am not focusing my goals on closing the deal or actually signing up students. I'm focusing on the process. I'm focusing on the person that I need to become to hit those goals. And how do I become better at doing a Facebook challenge 5 days? I need to really learn the material well. I need to be passionate about it. I need to be transparent about it. And I need to be a better salesperson about it. That's what it comes down to. And I'm going to fail. But I know everyone out there is winging it just like I am. So if I look stupid or I sound stupid, it's okay. I'm going to get better at it. And if you go back 5 years and listen to our first few podcasts, I'm sure they weren't that great, you know, but I got better at it and I enjoyed it. And that's what happened with me. I gravitated more towards the education space because I enjoyed that. I enjoyed writing articles. I enjoyed doing conferences. I enjoyed speaking to people. I love the coaching aspect of it. Jake doesn't like coaching as much. He gets drained. He's more of a D. He's like, you know, Darren, this is what you need to do. Six cap, this part of the market. 10% cash on cash return. I dive in a little deeper with people because I know it's more or less it's 80% psychological and 20% mechanical. That's where my skill set is and that's what I enjoy. So, you know, as we started growing, he did less coaching. Now he does no coaching and I do all the coaching and he does property management and I'll jump in on the property management. But that's what it is, everybody. Just commit and then figure it out. Figure out what you want to do. Don't worry about hitting the send button on the email. If it goes out bad, it's okay. We all make mistakes. We can fix it. But if you never hit the send button, you're never going to know what those results are.
That's so key. And it hits home with me. I remember when I started on Instagram, just like a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was scared to hit the send button, like on the first post, like, what are people going to think, you know? And the guy, I had hired a guy that was, you know, strong on Instagram and he's like, Darren, who are you going to trust? Somebody who has 100 followers or 300,000? I'm like, all right, man, I'll, you know, tell me the way. And he's like, you have to post every day. And I'm like, oh, this is uncomfortable. But then it becomes habit. And, you know, so all those things that you guys have accomplished, and you didn't say it, but, you know, it's one step at a time. And you make a decision to go after something new. And all right, what's the first thing I got to do? And then what's the next thing I got to do? You know, because if you think about all the steps necessary to get one of these big projects done, it can consume you and it could prevent you from, paralyze you from wanting to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
I remember people asking me, you know, what was the hardest part of your first syndication deal? Was it the raising the money part? And I was like, it was every part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first time doing it, you know, calling the broker. You know, but as you do it more, it's not as scary, right?
Yep.
And so then it opens you up to be able to go after that new challenge, which you guys keep pressing the boundaries, which I love. So you guys are going after people that are ahead of you. They're reaching down and helping you, and then you're reaching down and helping the next guy, which is, you know, that's what life's all about.
And I remember the first time we decided to syndicate, I'm sitting in the library. Now picture this. I'm sitting in a library. I'm working at the restaurant. I don't have an office. Jay calls me. We're pretty successful, but we're not there yet. And he's like, dude, there's a $52 million deal in Knoxville. And I got this feeling in my stomach that I felt like throwing up. I'm like, where are we going to get like $8 million or $10 million to do this? He's like, let's syndicate it. And I had no idea. So that's how we got into the syndication. That first look around, we had no shot of getting that deal. But what did that do? That's opened up my mind to other possibilities. He pushed me into that, probably knowing we didn't have a shot at it, but at least taking a look at it and saying, you know what? we're not ready for $52 million syndication, but let's take a look at it. Let's learn the process. And this is how you scale into bigger assets, right? So what do? On our first syndication 2 years ago, it was a $6 million deal. It was only 130 units. We started small. We were able to raise $2.5 million in 2 days. It was comfortable. But like you said, Darren, it's still a learning process. There's still processes. You still have a PPM. You still have to raise money. You still have to send out emails. You still have to go down the timeline. It was a different process. We started small. But starting and thinking big and even, you know, pushing myself to even consider that, I really felt like throwing up. I'm like, what is this guy thinking about? We can't go over a $60 million deal. But that just started the wheels turning my mind saying, you know, why not? Why can't we look at it? So,
yeah, I think that's a great question. Why not you? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, so many people talk themselves out of it like, oh, that's for other people. But why not you? Right.
Yep.
And
I agree.
It's not just about you. It's, look, once you become successful, then you could go help your circle.
Yep.
You know, so that's where the impact comes in. Talk about your childhood. Where'd you grow up? How many brothers, sisters?
Grew up in New York.
New York.
Born in Brooklyn. When I was 3 years old, we moved out to the suburbs. I have one brother. So I didn't come from a big family. My parents are both immigrants. They're both Italian. My dad opened a restaurant when I was 7 years old. I worked with him from the age of 8 years old, working in the kitchen, probably doing illegal stuff. Now I was working on the fryer, cutting chicken with a knife, you know, all that stuff, right? And I just remember working really hard. That's what I remember doing. I remember saying, this is great. I get to work with my dad every day. I thought everyone went to work with their dads at the restaurant. That's what I thought, right? So that led me to go to college. I was the first one in the family to go to college. When I graduated, I went to work for AIG in reinsurance accounting. That was like watching paint dry.
Oh, wow. I never would have thought that you would have gone into that field. I don't know why, but like it just doesn't seem like the Geno thing. Like, you know.
Well, back in 92, I mean, there's no jobs. Everyone's like, you know, you have the pick of the litter right now. Back in 92, I couldn't get a job. So one of my neighbors was a controller of the company. And he got me a job and it was just not a fun job. AIG was an amazing company back then in 90. They were really crushing it back there. Maurice, he was killing it. But I just didn't like the city. It was pre-Giuliani. It was just not a great place. I didn't like being there. So my dad and I, my mom, my brother, four of us, we bought a restaurant in Putnam County in New York. And we had that restaurant for, you know, we just sold it in February of this year. So I quote unquote left in March of 16. So I'm gone 4.5 years. My brother kept it for a couple of more years and he just sold it in February of this year before the whole pandemic broke out. He moved to Florida right around that time also. So he's working with Jake and Gino company also. But for us, we love the business. I mean, I grew up in it. The problem was, you know, back in the 90s and early 2000s, it was a business where it was middle class, where you could really make a living, right? I mean, it was a great, we had two families living out of that restaurant, actually three. And it was fun. We had great food. Expenses were different, right? I mean, there was no health insurance expense. There was no unemployment. All the bills were so much different back then. And as the cost came rising, you know, once 08 hit, my father passed away in 07, I stopped and I said to myself, am I building my dad's dream or am I building my dream? I want to have more impact and I want to have a little more stability because everyone thinks W-2s and small businesses, hey, that's safe and secure. This multifamily thing, that's risky. Whereas multifamily has less risk if you know what you're doing, as opposed to, because it's a basic human need. It's food, clothing, and apartments. That's what multifamily is, right? But my W-2 and, you know, you look at the restaurant, oh wait, what happens? All of a sudden, eating habits start shifting. Families start getting smaller. People start going to Panera and other fast food. And all of a sudden, Whole Foods is making pizza. And all of a sudden, Taco Bell is delivering food. Everyone's delivering. So every little piece comes out and everyone's opening restaurants and all different kinds of food. So I saw that coming and I said to myself, I need to do something else. So that's how I got into multifamily. I didn't want to fix and flip. I had that job already. So I naturally just said, you know what? I like working with residents. I like the property management. I bought a fourplex in New York. And then from that, I said, let's start scaling up and getting the bigger properties.
Awesome. So what is the big stretch goal for Geno?
So the big stretch goal is to feed 1 million kids by the year 2030. Wow. It's with Second Harvest Food Bank. We just started a partnership with them about 6 months ago. By 2030.
And how do you track that?
They track it on their website. We have donations, so we're going to have an evergreen link. It's not on yet, but we've been doing food drives with them for the last 2 years. So I'm like, let's make that evergreen. Let's put that on our site and let's start promoting it. So it's not live yet, but that's one of my goals because Jake, you know, that's one of his passions. He likes to say to, you know, the kids don't have a choice. Adults, we have choices, but kids are the ones who don't have choices. So that's tough for me. Also, I'm working with an orphanage in Honduras. That's another passion project of mine that I want to be able to help out. And stretch goal, that's a tough one. I don't know number of units because like we were talking, what's going to happen with the economy? What's going to happen with valuations? I can't say I want to have 5,000 units. I know that I want my students to own 50,000 units within the next 2 years. That's a stretch goal. And you know, the more people we're able to sign into our community, the more people that are there that are willing and able to partner with others and bring capital and bring deals, that is where I'm there for it. Hopefully being the inspiration, the motivation for them, helping them out, I'll be able to accomplish that.
Fantastic. Well, I hope you get there. And most of the people that I've asked that question have focused on how many units, or I'm going vertically integrated, or I'm, you know, I think it's the first person that had a goal of purely charity. Hey, applaud you guys. What do you like to do outside of business?
So my son, when we moved down to Florida,
Where in Florida are you?
I live in St. Augustine, okay. 45 minutes south of Jacksonville. I said, we'll buy a golf cart, made it street legal. But I said, you know, we move down here, we'll buy a couple of guns. So being the father and the parent that I needed to be, I needed to go out and learn all about guns. So it's actually a lot of fun. You know, I never shot. We used to shoot 22s, right? So coming down here, buying a 9mm, buying a 380, AR-15, you know, but honestly, it's important that you go out and you get trained. I went out, got some lessons to shoot. And it's actually, if you're safe, it's an amazing way for me and my son to bond. We love talking about guns. We shoot guns. It's a lot of fun. Love fishing down here. Love biking. I'm about 500 feet from the beach. I love going to the beach. And I just love, actually, believe it or not, I love business. I love talking to my kids and involving my wife. We have the podcast. We have our kids involved in businesses. They're involving and they're actually investing in our assets. So I have them talking about investing in our deals. That's what I like. I like business and I just love hanging out with the family.
That's fantastic. So I grew up in Connecticut. I've been in the Dallas area for the last 10 years.
We're in Connecticut.
Brookfield near Danbury, right off Cambridge yes. Lake.
Yes. Yeah. Trader Joe's. I used to go to the Trader Joe's all the time. So yeah. Exactly where you are.
So
it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful, but I don't miss the winters. The winters are definitely a lot easier in Dallas than they are. Uh-huh. But I did not grow up hunting or, you know, shooting or guns or anything like that. Texas is big time into the hunting thing and the father son bonding and I had another guest on the show probably, I don't know, 4 weeks ago, and he brought up that he had a ranch, and so I told him, oh yeah, that's what my son's a sophomore in college, that's one of his big goals is to own a ranch, and he's like, well, why don't you guys come down and we'll go out on the ranch and we'll go shooting, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing, you're gonna have to show me. He's like no problem. So we're going down in about 3 or 4 weeks, and so I'll have my first experience with it.
You're going to love it. We actually had the event that Jake and Gina last week, and I had one of our students who was a trainer. We had a coaches retreat. All our coaches got together. We went to the gun range from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., and it was freaking awesome. I mean, some of the coaches never shot guns, but great bonding, but it's just a lot of fun. If you do it safely and you do it, you're going to do it, get out there, spend money for lessons, because it's so worth learning how to do something for the first time and learning how to do it right. It's just really important.
That's awesome. Gino, I really appreciate you coming on the show. If somebody wants to reach out and get to know you better, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Just go to jakeandgino.com. If you want, I'm holding up the honeybee right now. I know you can't see it. I know Darren can. Just email me gino@jakeandgino.com and I'll send you a PDF copy of the honeybee. I know you guys will really love it. If you have any questions, just reach out to me by email, gino@jakeandgino.com.
Are you saying you're going to give away the book?
Yeah, give a PDF copy. Yeah, because it's starting the journey, right? Because, you know, like you said, you explained it. We went into detail. If somebody has that burning desire to get into multifamily or get into a business, I think that's one of the ways for them to start getting into the business.
If you guys are listening, I read the book and I bought the book on Amazon, and he's offering it for free. Just email him, take him up on that offer. And these guys are both Gino and Jake are extremely transparent. Check out their website, read their book, and we're going to see big things coming from these guys going in the future. So I hope you guys enjoyed that one. Gino, again, thanks for coming on. And until next time, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.